He wasn't very long in the land, pitching his tent, building his altar, calling upon the name of the Lord. A pilgrim, a priest, and a man of prayer. Then there came a test, and Abram failed. There was a famine in the land, and he went down to Egypt. Remarkable that the man who surrendered all, left everything behind and burned his boats to go out after God when the first test came, so to speak, in the land, he failed, and he went down to Egypt. That's life, isn't it, brethren? We're trusting God for eternity, but we can hardly trust him when a little pressure is brought to bear upon us. When he went down into Egypt and the shadow of Egypt fell across him, he denied his relationship with Sarah. Now follow carefully at this point. In this incident, not alone, the man represents the activity of the elect, whether faithful or unfaithful. The woman represents the principles that he stands associated with. Now, have you got that? The man will represent the actings of the elect, whether faithful or unfaithful. The woman will represent the principles that he stands associated with. Now, if you know your New Testament, you will have caught exactly the meaning. When you go over to Galatians 4, Sarah represents the heavenly system of grace, as Hagar represents the system of law. And in type and in picture, when the man of faith went down into Egypt, illustrative of the world, he denied his relationship with grace. Isn't that true? When the shadow of the world falls upon us, the first thing that we do is to deny any association with the grace of God. We no longer confess the truths of the gospel and possibly hide our association with Christ. Ultimately, they came back up. Abram and Lot together, and the rich men. Oh, brethren, it's possible to go on in the world by turning your back on God. The time in Egypt made them rich men, and that's what caused all the trouble. They came back up out of Egypt wealthy. It's the first mention of wealth in your Bible. And it caused trouble. What caused the first trouble in the land? Riches. Achan, the wedge of gold, the 200 shekels of silver, and the goodly Babylonish garment. What caused the first trouble in the church? The Hellenistic believers complained that their widows were neglected in the daily ministration, possibly of money and goods. That's caused a lot of trouble since. And of course, the herdsmen, there was strife. You can understand this. They wanted the best pasture for themselves. And so there was strife between Abram and Lot's herdsmen. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite were then in the land. So that the ungodly are looking on. Strife. Oh, brethren, how we've exposed ourselves to the world. Now, I want you now, if you're open at chapter 13, to drop your eye, please, to verses 7 and 8. I want you to note that when this situation began to develop between Abraham and Lot and the herdsmen, I want you to note carefully, please, that Abraham made the first move to break the deadlock, or maybe better, he anticipated the deadlock and he moved to do something about it. Now please look at verse 8, the beginning and the end. Abram approaches Lot and he says, "Let there be no strife, for we be brethren." Can you see the principle upon which he moves? No strife. For we be brethren. Strife and brethren are incompatible. Strife and relationship are totally opposed. "By this shall all know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one toward another. Brethren, now if it's too strong, you excuse me, won't you? The curse of brethrenism. You can go on outwardly in fellowship when all the warmth of love is gone. And we'll keep the wheels of spiritual machinery working when love is long gone and there's hostility and strife between brethren. Now watch. Lord, no strife, for we be brethren. Our relationship means that that can't exist. And Abram moved to heal it, to break it, to solve it. That's how he solved the problem. He makes the appeal to Lot. Now, I want you to note, please, that the spiritual man moved to do something about it. Now, let me stop for a moment, please. How is it with you and your brethren? And if things are not too good, have you moved to break it? Have you moved to eliminate the difficulty and the strife and the trouble? Now, if you haven't, I'm sorry. You see, the spiritual man will move. The man who's not spiritual will leave it as it is. Now, watch. When Abram moved, he surrendered. He surrendered his natural right as the elder. He surrendered his tribal right as chieftain. He surrendered his spiritual right as heir and moved to Lot to try and solve the situation and solve the problem. Now, have you got that? Now, let me repeat it. He could have stood in his dignity as the elder. He could have stood in his dignity as the tribal chief. He could have stood in dignity as the man that God had chosen as the heir. But he didn't. He surrendered his natural right as elder, his tribal right as chieftain, his spiritual right as heir, and he approached Lot and says, let's get this thing right. Ah, how many of us stand in our dignity, especially if we're elders and leaders. We'll say, well, now, if he's not pleased about it, he knows what to do. He can come and see me. Won't do, brethren. Now it won't do. Want you to note. And you'll allow, please, like yourself, I know the background of certain of these scriptures that I'm going to pick up now. The servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle. Personal relations. The wisdom that cometh from above is peaceable. Let your moderation, let your yieldingness be known unto all. That word moderation, yieldingness, oftentimes rendered gentle, is one of the untranslatable words of the New Testament. Matthew Henry, I think, says sweet reasonableness. Would it interest you to know the real basic meaning of the word? The basic meaning of the word is this: not insisting on your rights. Abram didn't insist on his rights as the elder, as the chief, as the heir. He surrendered his rights to put things right with his brother. My brethren, you can't fight with a man that surrenders his rights. Not insisting on your rights. That means this: that you temper judgment with mercy. In personal relations with each other, you forgive when you have the right to condemn. Oh, brethren, oh, we forgive when we have the right to condemn. Could we not do with lots of brethren like this in Ayrshire? Eh? Would not our assemblies flourish? When a matter comes up, brethren, I surrender my rights, you're prepared to surrender yours. No problem. No problem when brethren don't stand in their dignity. Watch, brethren. Abraham allowed the younger, weaker, and less spiritual man to make the choice. Would you do it? Come on, brethren. Would you do it? When something arises, would you allow the younger, weaker, and less spiritual brother to make the choice? And in the language of Psalm 74, Abram is saying, the Lord shall choose the inheritance for me. Oh, the pride that's in us. Pride as brethren. Pride as leaders. We don't seem to realize that it's the spiritual man that surrenders his rights and does it first. So it was. So it was in that day. Abram says, listen, Lot, the whole land's before you. Make your choice. If you go that way, I'll go this way. If you care to go that way, I'll go that way. Lot, make your choice. And I'll leave the issue, as far as I'm concerned, I'll leave it with God. Now drop your eye, please, to verse 10 to 13. So Lot did that. He lifted his eyes. Now watch, please. Verse 10, he lifted his eyes. He beheld the plain of Jordan. Verse 11, he chose. He journeyed. They separated. He dwelled. He pitched his tent toward Sodom. And ultimately is sitting, administrating in Sodom's gate. Got that? Now watch. Lot lifted up his eyes. And he looked around. And if you read carefully at verse 10, he's all mixed up. As he looks around, he sees the well-watered plain stretching out towards Sodom, says this, that as he looked at it, it was like the garden of the Lord. It was like the land of Egypt. My, what a mix-up. Eh? What a mix-up. What does it mean? Well, now, you'll appreciate this, that if through life you look at things through your own eyes, then you'll see things the way you want to see them. But if you look at things through the eye of faith and through the eyes of God, you'll see things the way God wants. Mind you, there's a world of difference, brethren. Big world of difference. Now, I don't know if you can be objective. If you can stand outside of yourself and take a look at yourself. Honestly, brethren, are you walking by faith or walking by sight? Is there much difference between us and respectable worldlings? Are we really trusting in God and leaving God to work things out in life? And when difficult times come, will we bow in meekness and surrender our rights? And say, well now, brother, there'll be no difficulty. We can put this matter right. I'll yield to you. It's not a question of truth or fundamental, it's personal relations. Lot lifted up his eyes and he saw that it was like the garden of the Lord. What does that mean? That means this. That he looked at it as all ordered providentially by God. He could hardly believe his eyes. He looked at it and he said, my, that's wonderful. This is just what I've wanted. And you know, I never asked for it. It was handed to me. I got it on a plate. I didn't need to fight for it. I never even prayed for it. There it is all before me. And he took it as providentially ordered. And brethren, it was wrong. It was wrong. Oh, I know this is delicate ground. You'll follow me carefully, won't you? The fact that a thing is providential and comes your way without your asking and without your fighting does not necessarily always mean it's of God. Providence put Moses in Pharaoh's court. Faith took him out of it. Providence governs circumstances. Faith governs conduct. Now, I'm not being critical. Some of you heard me saying this a couple of weeks ago in Saltcoats. There are some brethren, when things fall into their lap, they consider it's all of God. Now, I'm not saying it's not. My experience of my brethren is that all promotions of God. Has that been your experience? No, I'm not saying it's wrong. But that's the experience. If you were demoted, would you take it as from God? Or do you start to look around for another situation? Or, and now this is not unknown in Ayrshire and elsewhere, haven't we known men who have even refused promotion to keep themselves free for God's service? Give more time to the things of God? Now I'm bringing these things one or two before you, just that we might all challenge our hearts and ask ourselves the question, what's paramount? Lot asked the question, what shall it profit a man? And came up with a wrong answer. Oh, all seemed just like the thing. But it wasn't, brethren. It wasn't. Again, he looked and he saw it. He said, my, it's like the land of Egypt. My, that's interesting. If he had never been in Egypt, he could never have said that. Isn't that right, brethren? If he had never, so to speak, to use our word, if he had never backslidden, he could never have compared it to Egypt. Tell me, have you ever backslid? Now, brethren, please. Now, sure, you'll accept this from me, won't you, that all the backsliders don't leave the meeting. Now, you would accept that, wouldn't you? Have you ever gone back? You know, you remember the slavery in Egypt of Israel. You remember the whip, the degradation, the taking away from human dignity. When they got out of Egypt and in the wilderness, they forgot all about it. Isn't that right? When things began to go wrong, do you know what they were saying? We remember the fish we ate in Egypt. We remember the cucumber, the leek, the melon, and the onion, and the garlic. Let us make a captain and go back to Egypt. Oh, surely. Oh, no. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And as he looked out on the lush plains of Sodom, it reminded him he had made his money in Egypt. It could just be the same again. Come on, brethren. Now watch. Let me say something. If you don't follow me, just have patience, and I'll explain it to you later in the exposition. Now listen carefully. Egypt led to Sodom. Sodom led to Zoar. Zoar led to the mountain. The mountain led to the cave. Have you got that? Now I'll repeat it and I'll explain it. Egypt led to Sodom. Sodom led to Zoar. Zoar led to the mountain. And the mountain led to the cave. Now let's come. Verse 12 and 13, please. He pitched his tent toward Sodom. Now, you might say this to me. Now, just a minute, Jack. Just a minute. You know as well as we do that when Lot pitched his tent towards Sodom, he didn't know that God was going to judge Sodom. That's right. You're perfectly correct. Isn't that right? That's correct. When Lot pitched his tent towards Sodom, he didn't know that God was going to judge Sodom. Now, just a minute. Let me come back again. Neither did Abram. Isn't that right? Abram didn't know God was going to judge Sodom, but Abram wouldn't touch it. Why? Now here's the reason. As I talk to you, drop your eye to verse 13. The moral issue always decides and makes the decision for you. Why wouldn't Abram touch Sodom? The men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. The moral issue and condition of Sodom should have kept Lot away from it. When he saw what the Sodomites were like, he should have stayed out of it. Have you got that? Now, brethren, let me say this. I don't know just how well taught you are, but we'll find out now just within half a minute. Have you ever been taught the difference between the Sodom system the Egyptian system, the Jericho system, and the Babylonian system. Come on now. Have you been taught the difference between the Sodom system, the Egyptian system, the Jericho system, and the Babylonian system? Now, Lot was drawing near the Sodom system. What's that? Well, now, it'll come before us in a minute, but I'll tell you now. The Sodom system is the world. All around us, that's marked by sex, immorality, filth, dirt, free love, that comes before you every day when you lift your daily paper, that's thrown at you from the hoardings and via radio and television and glossy magazines. Isn't that right? You can hardly touch anything around you, but the sex question is dominant. You young folks are being reared in a world where you'll be encouraged to anticipate the marriage bond before you're married. And they'll give you the wherewithal to do it, so you'll never be found out. That's Sodom. Have you ever noticed how the Lord talked about it? Now listen carefully. In Luke 17. When he talked, you remember, about the days of Noah. He said this. Now he says, in Noah's day before the flood, they ate, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage. Isn't that right? Ate, drank, married wives, given in marriage. Watch now. He now begins to talk about Lot's day. He says, as it was in the days of Lot. They ate, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded. But they didn't marry nor were given in marriage in Sodom. That's omitted. Can you hear them saying it? What they say today, it's only a piece of paper anyway. Isn't that where Britain is? Isn't that where the world is? All the pop stars and film stars and ordinary folks, they're taking up house together unmarried. And when you're tired of the partner, you can walk out. And along with it, and I'm no male chauvinist, along with it, a strong women's lib movement. It's amazing how these things come to light, but they're all a mark of moral degradation. As the nation goes down, the strident call of lib becomes stronger. Am I getting through? Do you understand me? Egypt leads to Sodom. Now, in God's name, never turn your back on God or his people. As I talk to you, please, just turn your Bible to chapter 19, will you? And note certain things, will you? Lot's in Sodom. He's sitting in the gate. He's getting on well. Oh, there's a strong movement now amongst us, brethren. Strong movement to take part in politics. And they can shout from the housetops as much as they like. The Lord was no politician. Paul didn't give his life to it. Now watch. One day the angels came to Sodom. And Lot invited them in. Do you know what they said? Sorry, Lot, we'd rather stay in the street. Your home doesn't appeal to us. Well, it's devastating, isn't it? Sorry, Lot, we're not attracted by it. You might be a big man here, but it doesn't appeal to heaven. Now, let me appeal. Now, please, I'm not talking about living up with the Joneses. That day's past. We're the Joneses. Have you got that? I'm not talking about living up alongside the Joneses. We're the Joneses. I'm talking, brethren, I'm talking about worldliness getting into our hearts and into our lives and into our homes. Now watch how the climate of Sodom will affect this man. They tell you it doesn't affect you. Well, watch this man in Sodom. At last, he prevailed on the angels to go inside. Now look now at verse 5. And they called unto Lot. They said, "Where are the men that came in? Bring them out that we may know them." Now that is a sexual connotation. Sodomy is homosexualism. Bring them out. They weren't seeking their credentials. Bring them out. Homosexuality. It's legalized in Britain now. Lesbianism. Brethren, it's possible to be right in the eyes of the British law and wrong in the eyes of God. There's a gay society clamoring for 100% recognition in Britain. That's where we are now. Now, watch how this man's affected. Look at verse 8. Do you know what he said to the angels? Oh, no. What he said to the men outside, "Oh, no, don't touch these men. They've come in under my roof, but I tell you what I'll do. My daughters are virgins, I'll give you them." That shows that the whole approach of these men was sexual. Do you think heaven would be happy with him giving his virgin's daughters over to be raped to try and save a couple of angels? See how the climate of Sodom had permeated the man, despite the fact, mind you, would hardly believe this. If we had only this record, you'd think this man wasn't converted at all. 2 Peter 2 says he vexed his righteous soul from day to day with the filthy conduct of the Sodomites. But brethren, he hadn't the moral power to extricate himself. Isn't that right? Now, just let me go back a moment, please. Now, you follow me carefully here. Do you remember in chapter 14 when five kings went against four kings? Do you remember the side that was defeated included the king of Sodom? And do you remember the victorious kings took Lot captive? Isn't that right? Remember that? Do you remember Abram organized his army to go after to rescue Lot? Now here's what it says in Genesis 14. Now listen carefully. Verse 14. When Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he went out to recover him. Now this is Abram as a soldier. Now I want you to notice something. As soon as Abram heard, not that his nephew, that his brother was taken captive, he went out to rescue him. Now he could have said, well, after all, he made his choice, he can stew in his juice. Is that how we would have spoken? We warned him, but he wanted to go. Just let him go. Oh, brethren. I'll tell you more. When he brought him back, where do you think Lot went to? Back to Sodom. Brethren and sisters, are we prepared to learn the lesson today that we'll need to serve weaker and less spiritual brethren and get no result from it? Come on now. Abram constantly served Lot. He did everything to help him. He went out with his trained household against superior numbers. At risk of his own life, he recovered Lot to find Lot just going back to Sodom again. Oh, it's all so disappointing. Are we prepared to serve our brethren like that? And keep on serving them and keep on helping them, despite the fact that they never justify the spiritual energy you bestow upon them. Oh, brethren, is it big? Is it too big? Oh, what a difference it would be, eh? Can you hear the brethren talking? Oh, we visited them, and they said they weren't coming back again. What's that got to do with it? What's that got to do with it, brethren? You're shepherds after sheep. You can't expect that brother or sister backsliding to have a correct estimate. They don't know. But you know where they should be, and you should keep at them until they do get back. And like Lot, it may be you'll get little or no recompense. Little or no joy. But that's your job, to recover your brother. So that at the judgment seat,
He can't say he was left alone. Nobody came to help him.
Got it? Now, quickly, and I must finish. Time's up. When the judgment came, he didn't want to clear out. Oh, he says, just give me a little city. Just a little place. That's all I want, a little city. And then when he was in the city, the next thing was he wanted the mountain. See how restless a person becomes? Out of Sodom to Zoar, out of Zoar to the mountain, out of the mountain to the cave. Now listen carefully. Now I won't violate your sensibilities, and I'll say this and sit down. Listen, brethren. He's up there with his two girls. I don't know where he got his wife from. The elder daughter says one day to her sister, her young sister, there's not a man to have relations with us. I tell you what we'll do. We'll make her father drunk tonight and I'll lie with him. And the next night, they made him drunk again and the young one lay with him. And he fathered two sons from his two daughters. And the only thing that can be said for Lot is this. They're to make him drunk to get him to do it. Listen, can I raise my voice today in air, please? Can I show you from Genesis 19 away at the beginning the connection between alcohol and sex? Come on, brethren. Can you see the connection between drink and immorality? There it is planted in Genesis 19, right at the beginning. For mind you, we're living in the day of the social drink. 1 Timothy 3 says that elders are wineless. Will you take the warning, you young folks? Beware of it, for even in this world to this day, drink and sex go together. Can you see the difference in believers? The difference in believers? Abram was spiritual, Lot was worldly. Abram was large-hearted and generous, Lot was mean and greedy. Abram looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Lot dwelt in a city built by man and destroyed by God. Abram was the father of the faithful. Lot's the father of two men whose descendants were always inveterate enemies of Israel. Eh? Father of the infamous. Can you see that differences come in between believers? Isn't that right? We've all known it. Can you hear the inspired writer appealing? Be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake forgave you. Can you hear him? Thirdly, the difference for believers. Abram expands, manifestation after manifestation, and he goes on growing and expanding in the knowledge of God and communion with the Eternal. He dies in a good old age full of days. Isn't that right? Lot, oh, what a terrible home life he had. What a terrible life it was. He lost his pilgrim character. He lost his power for witness. He lost his possessions. He lost his purity. Became soiled. He was the first to soil his daughters. Can you wonder, brethren and sisters, listen to me. Can you wonder? Have you ever noted? You never read that Lot died. You never read of the death of Lot. That man died to God years ago. Say, how is it with you? Can you hear the call of God today? Oh, if nothing else is accomplished from this conference, if something is wrought into your soul to live nearer to God, to give up the world that you're treasuring, the wee bit world, the wee bit city, little Zoar, just a little. And if each of us can come clean out, to walk like Abraham, to walk after Christ, to walk with God, in all the purity of his presence and in all the wonder of fellowship with him. Thank you.